Welcome to Noon Wednesday. I'm Marissa Wojcik, multimedia journalist with Here and Now on PBS Wisconsin. Today is January 19. Wisconsin's drinking reputation preceded the COVID-19 pandemic, but the stress of the past 2 years has propelled consumption and alcohol-induced deaths have increased by 25%. Joining us to talk about how these numbers have gotten to where they are Ari Brown, researcher for Wisconsin Policy Forum, and Brian Gleason, an addiction counselor from Mayo Clinic of Eau Claire. And thank you both for this conversation.
Thank you. Yeah, good to be here.
Ari, I'll start with you. Your latest report dug into these numbers, which found that not only have alcohol-related deaths increased by 25% in Wisconsin, but Wisconsin is also 25% higher than the rate nationwide. What made you want to look into this research and find those numbers?
Yeah, so that's a great question. This research is something that we've been pursuing in different forms for quite a while. Back in 2019, we looked at a similar data set that looked at life expectancy, and we found some concerning trends around life expectancy in Wisconsin being driven by things like alcohol-induced deaths. And then mid last year, we actually looked at alcohol tax revenues, which is really the best proxy that we as policy researchers have for what overall alcohol consumption looks like in the state of Wisconsin. And we found in 2020 that alcohol tax revenue in Wisconsin increased quite a bit in a way that hadn't been seen for multiple decades since there had been major changes to taxation rules around alcohol in Wisconsin. So that, I think, really is what spurred this research. We were able to use a data set that is published by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that singled out alcohol-induced deaths. So these are deaths that are directly caused by alcohol, things like alcoholic liver disease, mental and behavioral disorders due to alcohol use. It excludes things that would result from the consumption of alcohol but not be directly caused by it, things like car accidents, violence caused by or, you know, in approximate distance to the consumption of alcohol. So just those deaths that are really a direct result of alcohol. But yeah, you're right. We found, you know, some alarming trends here, but things that we've been looking at for, you know, the last couple of years, even before the pandemic started.
And Brian, have you been seeing this in your day-to-day work as the pandemic has progressed?
Well, I've been doing this for a while and I've seen it for a long time, but I would say yes, during the pandemic, it's gotten worse. I also asked before this interview, asked a couple of colleagues of mine who work in other places, and they've seen the same trend, that that particular form of harm caused in a relationship with alcohol, where, you know, alcohol essentially as a poison of sorts is hurting a person's body, and that leads to illness and death. That, yes, that is something we've seen on the rise since the beginning of COVID.
And Brian, have you, I guess, seen how this has played out with clients, and as it made you busier, have you basically understood what people are going through as these last 2 years have progressed?
I would say yes. It's not that it's something new as much as it's just something that's gotten worse because of the you know, socially what's occurred. You know, generally as a person's alcoholism progresses, they're likely to become more isolated, and there are any number of people who kind of try to function as best they can using social contacts as a way to keep from essentially drinking too much, in a sense, controlling their own drinking by making sure they have regular social contact, whether it's with family or friends or, of course, on the job. During COVID, people have been isolated, so it's not surprising at all to me that we've seen an uptick, a significant rise in the number of people dying essentially from the somatic effects of alcohol.
Ari, do we know who this is happening to most acutely?
Yeah, so that was one of the things we were really trying to figure out was, you know, is this something that's happening across all different kinds of people, or is this really contained to specific groups. What we found was that the rate of alcohol-induced deaths among basically all groups, age, race, ethnicity, geographic location, all groups were increasing kind of over the span of not just during the pandemic, but the entire 21st century. What we found in terms of the groups that were really driving the increase, both in 2020 and kind of the last decade specifically, were those between the ages of 45 to 84, so kind of our middle age and our older Wisconsinites. And then another thing that we found in this report that was pretty alarming was, you know, for the most part, the death rate in racial and ethnic groups in Wisconsin tracks pretty closely to that of the U.S. rate. So, for example, the death rate for white Wisconsinites looks a lot like the death rate for white Americans. One of the things that we found quite concerning was that around 2012 or so, the death rate for Black Wisconsinites really started increasing and diverging quite heavily from the death rate for Black Americans. So for most of the 21st century, the death rate for Black Americans has been well below that for white Americans. In Wisconsin, that was mostly true as well. They kind of, I believe 2005 was the last year that Black Wisconsinites were above white Wisconsinites for the death rate. But that that has continued for America generally. That has not continued in Wisconsin. In 2019, the Black death rate rose above that of the white death rate. And, you know, we thought that was important to highlight because it was really one of the trends where you started to see a divergence from overall trends. You see the same kind of divergence in the middle age and older Wisconsinites as well, where their rate really around 2011, 2012 or so starts to increase above the rate for all Americans of similar groups.
And it kind of makes sense that an older group is going to have more health-related issues, either from being older or from drinking. And so it's not necessarily younger people that we're seeing from alcohol-induced death. But Brian, are we seeing younger and younger alcohol abuse problems in people? Is that something that you're seeing in your work?
It's interesting. It's kind of a little bit of a mixed picture there, I would say. I would say overall, yes. You know, there is a culture of drinking in Wisconsin, and not just drinking, but one of the main things that's shown up from the statistics that I've looked at is that it's not so much that people are drinking younger than they used to, or that they're more of them are drinking per, you know, capita or whatever, but what they are doing more is drinking more heavily when they drink. And that's been pretty clear, I think, from the research that I've seen, that what they're doing more is binge drinking. And so that's the type of drinking that's liable to bring about, you know, for younger people, the medical problem is more likely to be along the lines of alcohol poisoning. Where a person drinks so much so quickly that they simply anesthetize their central nervous system to the point that they die. It's not real common, it's not real frequent, but it's certainly going to happen more commonly among young people if you're living in a culture where younger people are drinking more when they drink. So again, it's not that more of them are necessarily drinking or that they're drinking more often, but when they drink more. And we've seen that be an even greater, and I don't have the figures right in front of me, but off the top of my head, I know that that's been actually through the past few decades more happening more often with young women than it used to. Young women in particular drinking more when they drink than young women in generations previous. Now, I will say this, though, to kind of counter it, I think that there is less, especially for underage drinkers, I think there's less tolerance or expectation in our culture today for that. Not a huge amount. I mean, there's still plenty of underage people drinking, especially in Wisconsin. It's been said in Wisconsin, we start them out young, and we do, we tend to. And it's kind of a known thing. If you grow up in Wisconsin, you're likely to be drinking before you're of legal age. But I think there's been a trend of less tolerance for that in the past few years. And I think, frankly, a lot of that is probably due to liability. You know, in the past, it wasn't wasn't unusual that parents would sponsor a drinking party for the high school football team, even though they were all underage. You know, we'll have them drink at home. It'll be safe there. They're going to be drinking anyway. At least they'll be drinking where we won't let them drink and drive. And so there was some thought about that. But you know, I've even seen road signs or advertisements on the road that say, you know, parents who sponsor drinking are liable for what happens. And I think that I've seen some change, although again, not dramatic, but some change in the tolerance for underage drinking. But overall, yeah, the overall trend has gotten worse for all ages. And as you said, especially older people.
So a lot of factors that are going into cultural shifts. And I believe, Ari, in your report specifically, that alcohol-induced deaths were not did not include young people who had given themselves alcohol poisoning. But can you talk about what are the consequences of the health and economic consequences of this large-scale rise in severe drinking that you laid out in this report?
Yeah, so just to respond to that first part, you know, our other guest mentioned, those are alcohol poisoning is one of the things that's included, but the numbers are pretty small in terms of people actually drinking themselves to death, like in an acute way rather than in a chronic way. I believe it was the third leading cause among the alcohol-induced causes, but a distant third, where the first two being alcoholic liver disease and then mental and behavioral disorders due to alcohol use being around 90% of all alcohol-induced deaths, and both in Wisconsin and nationwide. To respond to the second part of that, yeah, it's such a good question. And it's really something that I think policymakers should be thinking about in terms of, you know, what does this rise in alcohol-induced deaths mean for the health of Wisconsinites? And also for the health of, you know, the economy in Wisconsin. I think one of the things we were thinking about throughout this report was, you know, there is a big economy for purchasing alcohol in Wisconsin. You know, Wisconsin is kind of one of these states that's thought of as having a pretty strong drinking culture. You have, you know, breweries all around the state. And one of the things that we point out in this report, and this wasn't just Wisconsin specific, it happened in other places, but it did happen also in Wisconsin, was that there was a motion from the state to allow for what was termed to-go cocktails from, you know, bars and restaurants right at the beginning of the pandemic. And at the beginning of the pandemic, the concern, I think rightfully so, was making sure that small businesses could, you know, continue to function, continue to, you know, do their business and not hopefully, you know, go away as a result of the pandemic. And for, you know, a lot of things, that was a good motion and it helped a lot. But potentially one of the side effects that you have is the overall increase in the accessibility of alcohol. This was just another example, but you can go back, you know, over the last couple decades and find little motions here and there that have kind of served to increase the accessibility and availability of alcohol. So in terms of the economic picture, I think that's one of the important things to think about is, you know, it is an important economic industry in the state, but there are also these potential side effects. When it comes to health, I think one of the things that we focused on a lot in the pandemic, again, rightfully so, was, you know, we're really focused on getting COVID under control. And obviously, it's been a major factor in all of our lives for the last 2 years. But one of the things that that we've kind of been thinking about as policy researchers is, what are all of these kind of side effects of the pandemic on other areas of public policy? And alcohol is one of them, especially in our state. You know, the increase that we saw, the 25% increase, about 25% from 2019 to 2020, was by far the largest one-year jump in alcohol-induced deaths from for any year over the 21st century. And, you know, the doctor mentioned social isolation and things like that. And that's one of the things that we've been hearing from other experts on this as well, is that played a really big factor. So, you know, I think that those are kind of the big things to focus on when it comes to the health of Wisconsinites and the overall Wisconsin economy.
And if I remember correctly, when the pandemic first hit, kind of March 2020, many businesses were shut down, including restaurants and bars. But grocery stores and liquor stores were considered essential, and liquor stores were kept open. Brian, I wanted to ask you, so in Wisconsin, as we've already said, binge drinking levels were already high before the pandemic. Many places in Wisconsin were ranked top drinking cities nationally. So were people already on the edge or experiencing kind of a full-blown addiction, but it just wasn't being talked about?
Sure. Yeah, I would say so. You know, the thing that tends to get the headlines and get noticed are is abuse of other drugs. It's more dramatic. It's more immediate. One of the real I don't know exactly what to call it, dangers, I guess you would say, or one of the things that in my job that I see very often is the real harmful effect of alcohol. Quite often is its subtlety. It seeps in gradually, and so we will tend not to notice the effect, because the effect doesn't come on in rapid onset like it might with a drug like methamphetamine. Generally, if someone is, if you will, drinking themselves to death, it's a slow death. It's a very gradual thing. And that trend is something that's been part of our culture for a long time. You know, to call it suicide is maybe not quite to understand it, because I don't think that most people that drink themselves to death are doing so because they want to die, but rather as you watch it progress, it's so gradual that it is more subtle, and it's going to be below the radar, as you're suggesting. And people find a way to ameliorate it in a variety of ways that we lost, if you will, during the pandemic. So it makes sense that it's increased. But yes, it's definitely always been there. As the illness progresses, I don't think that very many alcoholics just decide, I want to die. I don't think it's suicide. It's been called slow suicide by self-poisoning, I don't think it's so much a matter of somebody willingly, of their own volition, deciding I don't want to live anymore, as much as they recognize that it's harming them. They recognize that it will end with their death. But as the disease progresses, that doesn't bother them as much as not drinking, as much as the idea of stopping drinking is more troubling to them than knowing that eventually this is going to take my life. And so that's what I've seen for years in working in this field. And that hasn't really changed with the pandemic. That's always been there.
And kind of that gradual progression, as you're describing, kind of sounds like the frog in boiling water. You don't notice it at first, and by the time it gets really bad, it's almost kind of too late to stop it. And often drinking is seen as a good thing, a celebration, a positive thing to kind of relax and let loose. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't always stay that way for folks. Ari, I wanted to ask you, so why has Wisconsin failed in the past to pass legislation that could address this, even for policies like more severe punishment for drunk driving offenses? Is Wisconsin's drinking culture directly impacting our policy decisions?
Yeah, this is such a great question. I think it's something that we were, you know, interested in pursuing as well. One of the things that we've kind of talked about a little bit with this report specifically is, you know, alcohol really seems to be what we refer to as a policy blind spot in Wisconsin. I think it's something that people are generally aware of. You know, you see things like the lists of like the top 40 drinking cities or the top 10 drinking counties, and usually a lot of them are in Wisconsin. And so I think it's something that people are aware of. But you know, it can be hard sometimes to get a lot of energy behind certain legislative proposals, or to figure out, you know, exactly what sort of policy solutions, you know, can be pursued in order to cut down on this as an issue. I do think it's important to note that if you go back to around 2000, the rate of death from alcohol-induced causes in Wisconsin was basically exactly at the national average. We don't have data before 1999. We only have data since then. But what we've really seen is the rate of alcohol-induced deaths in Wisconsin tracked very closely to that of the national rate until about 2010, 2011 or so, where it really started to diverge in the wrong direction. So another thing you can potentially point to here is that this real divergence and the you know 25% gap now between in 2020, the rate of alcohol-induced deaths in Wisconsin and the rate of alcohol-induced deaths in the United States in general is really kind of a newer phenomenon. The other thing that I'll point to here that has kind of been pointed out to us in doing this research is that a lot of alcohol policy decisions are made at the local level in Wisconsin. For example, you have items like liquor licenses. Those are largely determined by municipalities. So it's really hard sometimes to get a handle on the availability and accessibility of alcohol, which in doing our research were kind of two of the big items that you know, institutions like the CDC have pointed to in terms of what could potentially reduce the rate of alcohol-induced deaths nationwide. And when you have decisions being made at the local level, you know, in Wisconsin here, we have over 1,800 municipalities. So kind of that spread out decision-making, a lot of times it's hard to really get a handle on, you know, what exactly is being done and this the overall increase in the availability of alcohol.
Brian, we know there are stigmas against people struggling with addiction, but is this more of a mental health crisis? And what do you see as ways of addressing root causes of alcohol addiction?
Well, okay, so yeah, it absolutely is. In fact, that's where you find alcohol use disorder, as we call it now, or alcoholism is not really the medical term we use. It would be alcohol use disorder, is where you know the criteria for that diagnosis is found in the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. So it is a mental health issue. It absolutely is. It's kind of interesting in that way because sometimes the individual alcoholic or addicted person will wonder, am I addicted or am I crazy, if you will, you know, thinking about it in the simple sense. And it's like, well, that's where this particular illness is couched under that heading, if you will, mental health. I don't think I would necessarily separate the two by any means. Certainly other issues in regard to mental health impact it, and it impacts other issues in regard to mental health dramatically. But it is its own thing. I would add that we know today, and this is something actually I feel kind of privileged to get to say, just in the course of my career, we have come to see with hard science and neurological research and brain imaging that this thing we call addiction is a real thing. It's not just somebody behaving poorly. It's a change in the way that the brain operates. And it is really best described as a neurological hijacking. There's a lot of things that happen when a person drinks alcohol that kind of separate it in many ways from other drugs. It's such a simple organic molecule. It literally goes everywhere in the body. And that makes it difficult to research in a hard science way. It's actually one of the more difficult drugs to research because of that, because it's not kept to just a single pathways in the body. However, today we can say authoritatively that there's a real thing that happens here. There's a change in the way that the brain operates that seems pretty indelible. We don't know how to undo it. And it's maybe the best description I can think of is that it's a neural hijacking at the psychology level. And what is essentially the reason I have this job is because of that psychological hook that we understand the mechanism of that much better today, that it's a real thing, and it's best described as a hijacking of the neural pathways involved with attachment. It's an attachment. That's a really good word to think of when you're trying to understand addictions. Addictions are about attachment. They're about a lot of different things, but that in particular is what makes it a tough nut to crack.
Very interesting. So Ari, if there's not a lot of statewide policies that are going toward addressing root causes and prevention, does Wisconsin have enough resources kind of on the reaction back end side for services like counseling to wrap around those who need it?
Yeah, this is a great question, and one that I think policymakers should also be interested in digging into. One of the items that we kind of mentioned in the report is, we found last year that the state is now working with one of the bigger budget surpluses it's had in recent years, with definitely the potential to, focus some of that revenue towards things like addressing, prevention, education, treatment, for those who are experiencing issues surrounding alcohol use. There are definitely avenues that policymakers could be taking. It's hard to say right now, and definitely, you would expect that in terms of services that are available, you would expect that things kind of differ geographically. There are different issues, facing Milwaukee than, say, Vilas County. So I think that's a great question for policymakers to continue to pursue. The other thing that I'll mention here is, you had recent stimulus bills, for example, the American Rescue Plan Act that gave local governments a lot of revenue to work with. Of course, a lot of that revenue is going towards, filling other holes when it comes to things that were impacted by the pandemic. But we think, this is certainly one area that at a local level, if there is revenue, that could potentially be used for, public health spending. I'll say also that the Wisconsin Policy Forum doesn't advocate for as a nonpartisan organization, we don't advocate for any specific policies, but just, in terms of what's out there, those are kind of the big items when it comes to what policies could be pursued, both at the local and state level.
And Brian, if many people were possibly abusing alcohol before the pandemic, and now we see this getting worse, how does someone know if they need help? And if someone watching this, say, is a friend or family member of someone who may need help, what's the best way to broach this topic?
I'm glad you got to that question. First of all, if you're asking yourself, geez, I wonder if I have a problem with alcohol, that's a good indicator that you probably do. And the advice I'd have for either the individual or for the family member would be this. Keeping in mind the word that I used before can be really helpful because it's very confounding for the individual and the family to face this. If you can remember, this is like a relationship. This is like an attachment. And so if you've ever had a friend who fell in love with someone who just was no good for them, that's kind of like what you're facing here. You have a friend who's fallen in love with something. It's an attachment. They didn't ask for it. The interesting thing about attachments is they're not really that voluntary. There are decisions we make in regard to them, but they aren't really voluntary. Attachment is something that occurs. And if it's occurred, then you're going to need to help a person kind of get through a breakup, if you will. If you approach it like that and you approach it with that mindset, you're more than likely, and a caring, of course, a loving, caring mindset. I care about you, but I see this happening. It's much more likely to be successful, again, both for the family person and for the individual to recognize, I've got this attachment. I didn't really ask for it. I don't really want it, but I've got it. And therefore, I've got to move forward with trying to change my life. And, I think in all of the intricacies that go along with that breakup with the attachment's the best way to approach it.
All right. We need to leave it there. Definitely a very important topic, and really appreciate both of you contributing your unique perspectives, Ari Brown, researcher from Wisconsin Policy Forum, and Brian Gleason, an addiction counselor with the Mayo Clinic Health System out of Eau Claire. Thank you both very much for the conversation.
Well, thanks
for having us.
I've enjoyed it.
For more from Here and Now and PBS Wisconsin, you can visit pbswisconsin.org/news. And thank you so much for joining us on Noon Wednesday.